CosmicRadio.tv. This podcast would be nothing without our patrons, so special thanks goes out to them. Want to join their ranks and support independent content? Head to our Patreon at patreon.com/8bitlife. Hello with a fine edition of my so-called 8-Bit Life. I'm your host, Roberto Villegas. Joining me today, good friend, Matt Campbell.
So I've been curious. You've been on 8-Bit for a while now. When are you going to move to 16-Bit, Roberto?
I mean, I've told this story before. Did I ever tell you, like, the reason? I'm right now doing a little bit of moderation because there's a little bit of a bad person in our chat, and while they're no longer in the chat,
where are you looking at chat? I don't see chat anywhere.
You see, chat's over there, and I saw a word.
And, oh yeah, no, that's a word.
Yeah, and we don't like that word in a lot of ways. We're as a member of the
civilized society,
like, and of course the nerdy people of color. We look at that word. We say that word's bad. Thankfully, that person misspelled that word.
I mean, and he maybe pronounced it.
And he might be.
I think he ducked out.
Oh yeah, no, he ducked out, and the chat's no longer there in the chatosphere.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I think that is still definitely a. By the way, future reference. I got an add-on that you might want that will make that easier for you down the line.
Yeah, I probably will start doing that.
We'll deal with
but,
that.
But
we'll
thankfully, he spelled later. It wrong and didn't realize he was spelling a country. Because, you know, further, you know, and that's the beauty part about people like that.
Those
is that,
so
is that they
unintelligent.
Have no, that is that they are so disconnected from the rest of the world. And it's funny because we're talking about this, and I'm pretty certain five people are like, oh, that's the word they dropped. Interesting.
Yeah.
Because honestly, he just spelled a country, which is the, again, the beauty part of the people like that is that they're so far removed from the world at large and how the world is and how things are that they'll spell something thinking they're being offensive.
And then in reality, they're just showing how well versed they are in geography.
Right, exactly. They're like, yes. You know,
I am aware that this place exists.
It's like, I'm glad I am too. It's apparently an interesting country, from what I understand. It's in the I think it's in the continent of Africa.
Hi, person who I can't read your name because I can't shoot.
Apparently, a side order of soup is
side
also
order
Campbell
of soup. Yeah,
soup.
No, I the screen that I'm looking at, it's black on black, so
yeah,
I can't
we'll fix that later,
yeah,
one of these
fine.
Days. There's a lot of stuff we need to fix in terms of chat room. But going back to this, so Matt, for those who have no idea, you not only have your own main job that you know pays the bills.
Well, and that is a fun. That is actually so I have a job where I pay the bills. The thing where Roberto is going is I also own a little side business, but I think actually at this moment, my more interesting story is my main job now.
Yeah, which is interesting because your side hustle, as they call it in the biz, is the owner of like one of the prime, you know, one of the top, from what I understand you explaining.
Well, one of two, so.
It's still one of the, look, I'm trying to stalk it up. I'm giving you look, when you're a part of the two things, you don't say like one of the, you know, actually you could say this, you're one of the top two stores.
I am one of the top two stores.
For Hex Shards of Fate.
Yeah.
The popular, you know, Steam card game.
One of the, actually, not only the popular Steam card game, but also the, I will even go so far as to say the top PS4 card game, because they have since had a PS4 client.
What card game? I hate to ask this. What card games are on PS4?
Hex Shards of Fate and fuck all if I know else of, other than that. They might exist, but I don't know about them.
I'm just curious. Not even a bad way. I, you know, rock and roll, whatever works, I am not going to ever ever say that at all.
Yeah, no, and if anyone wants to ask, like, I will say Hex Shards of Fate, and who cares? Or I don't. You might, but I don't.
I think, I think the only thing I know so far that's developing in the card games like that, I think Magic is trying once again to actually make a halfway decent client.
Oh, gosh. If you want to talk about Magic Arena, we can talk about Magic Arena.
I just love that. What I love about that...
They're making a Hearthstone clone.
That's what I love so much about that, is that we've come full circle. Because...
It's not a trading card game.
Oh, no.
They've confirmed that it won't have trading, and that's why I don't care about it, because, like,
that's why we've come full circle. That's why we've come full circle, because you have MTGO, which was at least...
A shit show?
Yes. It is a shit show. It is a terrible piece of software. It is horrible. But it was, at the very least, a very, very comprehensive Magic the Gathering card thing.
So... They actually just decided...
Meaning that it actually could manage the stack.
Well,
which is enough, an accomplishment in its own right.
So I honestly, yeah, sure. And I have full expectations that the Arena will be able to handle the stack perfectly fine. The problems that I have with Arena have nothing to do with the actual gameplay. It's, as I kind of stated,
right.
It is going to be... They have... for those of you who don't know, Magic the Gathering is one of the largest, if not the largest, trading card game in the world. It is a multi-billion-dollar industry,
yep.
And the software version, the Hearthstone competitor, as you will,
there's a reason why Hasbro bought Wizards of the Coast,
right?
And
it had nothing to do with D&D, exactly.
Nothing to do with D&D.
It is terrible. It looks like it was developed in 2001.
That's because it was developed in 2001.
Yes, but they've updated it, and they've updated the UI, and it still looks like it was made in
2001. They actually changed the UI? I'm impressed that they got that far in the development of that product.
It's really just bad, and they finally came around and said, we're going to make they actually got one of the old presidents of Microsoft, believe it or not, is one of the old presidents of Microsoft is the current president of Wizards of the Coast. And what it comes down to is they're making it, and the reason why I am not a fan is because Magic Arena, as they're calling it, doesn't include any of the more eternal formats. It's only going to be standard, which is like the last three or four sets, which is admittedly how Magic Online started, and they slowly added old sets back through it. But the thing that really, really comes, when you get right down to it, the thing that I hate is the fact that it won't be a true trading card game. It will have the Hearthstone model where there isn't trading. You craft these cards out of whatever they want to call it. And I despise that. Like, I know that there is a large majority or a large swath of the community that really enjoys that because they don't have to deal with trading sharks or stores or what have you. But it's no longer a trading card game, and that's why I dislike it. I will be the first to admit, though, that I have a bias because I own a store that buys and sells.
I have a bias because that's the one feature I want from Hearthstone. And that's been, the one thing that when I played Hearthstone, when I got into it, I was like, oh, this is Magic Lite. Because there's no trading, there's no this.
There's no trading, there's no stack, there's no interacting on your opponent's turn unless you've previously played a secret on your turn.
Right, exactly. There's no. This is Magic Lite, and
it's
always...
really good for what it is.
Oh, no, that's the thing. I understand what its purpose is in life. It does a really good job of being its purpose in life.
Yeah, it
but
it's does basically the magic, best job.
Right, but
doing
it's basically Magic
its
Gathering Lite. And I'd always wanted an MTGO, modern client.
A good MTGO. Yeah, I would have loved a good
but
MTGO.
It's just so funny how we've come full circle.
You want to know the best MTGO client?
it's
Hex.
That's true. I was going to say, are you going to say, what is it, Magic's, what was it, Magic Suitcase? Or,
oh, gosh.
Let's see, because we've had, it's so funny how many Magic the Gathering virtual.
The best one. Is this like, oh god, it was
Apprentice?
An Xbox, no, well, there was an Xbox game that had literally nothing to do with Magic, but it was in the Magic universe, and it's actually kind of fun. It's not good, but it's fun.
Is it the RTS that they made years ago?
Oh, they made an RTS. This is
they made, look, they, it's Magic, I'm going to put it this way. Magic's kind of like Warhammer
in that they've done it. Well, Warhammer's actually done Warhammer's a lot of really
Warhammer's kind
of
figured
good.
Out there. They've just barely figured out how to make a video game.
Name a bad Warhammer video game, though.
Every one of them up until this last one.
No. Well, okay, are we including 40K?
Yes.
Because I loved Dawn of War. I loved Space Marine. They were both phenomenal games.
It's just not... They're just not... Okay. I don't always say phenomenal. Maybe I'd say par. I will say they have a better idea of licensing their property.
If you go in and you... Dawn of War was a solid real-time strategy.
Right.
And it captured the essence of Warhammer 40K pretty decently. Space Marine captured, I think, perfectly captured the essence of it. Because the funny thing about Space Marines was you had all these guys that were like, it's a Gears of War ripoff. And my response to them was hitting them over the head with a third edition rulebook to quote, that was actually quoting Total Biscuit. When he went in and did his Space Marine review, WTF Space Marine, because he's like, anyone who says this is a Gears of War ripoff, I'm going to hit you over the head with a third edition rulebook, because this was around in the fucking 70s.
Oh yeah, no, it's
and the thing was, it captured the essence of a Space Marine so well because of the things such as you were a singular Space Marine fighting this horde of orcs. And, like, you recharged your health by doing these KOs, and it was just, it captured the essence so well, and it was a really solid game.
It's funny because I would say that it's probably is, like, this is what's funny about game development and game stuff.
You know, you're talking to a legitimate game developer these days, right?
Exactly. But I mean, like...
Not these kind of games at all, and we'll get to that. But...
No. When I say game development, I mean, so... When we talk about the business of game development, especially at that level, AAA, even AA or like mid-tier, whatever you want to call a Warhammer IP game, because usually they're banking on, they're not making a game that's going to be hyper innovative, and so there's going to be like the elements, like when we break down a game like, you know, Gears of War, thematically it's not anything new, you know, if you want to, you know, whether it be because of, you know, it's inspiration from Warhammer, it's inspiration from fucking,
Warhammer. Like,
what was the movie that also was a book? Oh, God. With like, Mantis Aliens.
Yeah, no. Shoot, I read the book. Oh, goodness. You know what? Let me look
at
my
Audible
list.
It up, because it's like, it'll probably come to me. Because, like, all that's been thematically there. And then the movie had like all the different like Spanish name, like had like you had a quote unquote American sounding name and like a very much Spanish sounding last name, which I loved the most of those characters.
Well, and that was just like the university
right.
setup. It was really good.
No, that's why, and it's gonna bug me too. Once you figure out the movie, it's like
America space. How did we forget Starship Troopers?
Starship Troopers, that's one thing.
Like, how did we forget Starship Troopers?
But yeah, I'm saying like thematically, that's all been existing. Fine. Let's put that aside just because if we start talking theme, we're going to be here for all day.
Sure.
Coming back to, though, however, game mechanics, no offense, but we had third-person shooters, but Gears of War basically set the standard for...
Well, so here's the difference between Gears of War and Space Marine. And for those who aren't familiar with Space Marine was a 40K license where you effectively were a Space Marine that were going up against this massive orc horde, and I think at some point Chaos came into it or something, the Tyranids, what have you. So Gears of War was by-the-books cover-based shooter. Are you familiar with the 40K lore? Do Space Marines take cover?
I don't think so, from what I understand.
Exactly. That is the biggest thing that was a gameplay mechanic, and B, was dead on for... There wasn't the concept... There was no mechanic for taking cover in Space Marines.
Right. Because you just... It's like Space Marines were basically...
You went in and you fuck shit up.
Right, because you had the numbers, because they were cheap points and stuff like that.
Well, it wasn't even you had the numbers. It was... there's 100 to 1, but you're a space marine and they're damn orcs. You are That's a space fair. Marine for the Emperor.
Right, exactly.
And it kind of nailed it.
Okay.
I think so.
I mean, if there's no cover, then sure, you're yeah. fine. That's kind of weird for video game, but I understand thematically for... And again, it's this is where what I'm ultimately saying is that a lot of times when...
Now you've got me curious. What was the Metacritic for Space Marines?
I'm going to guess 60-something, 60-ish.
Really? I'm thinking high 70.
60, 70, just based on Metacritic. Probably 70, more or less. Like, I'll say number 75.
Let me spell Space Marines correctly. 47, that's powered by... Let me put Metacritic in it.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, so a lot of times your conversations become the idea of, like, it's a game like Gears of War when you're pitching the game to somebody and trying to figure out the stuff.
So this is the PC version, mind you. 74.
Wow, it was one off in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
After all that. I mean, you know, and that's not a bad game. It's just...
I'd say that's not even a bad game. I'd say that's a good game.
I would say it's a good game. And I guess this is what I'm trying to get at is... I mean, you'd imagine that because of... Like, I guess it's a question of this. When you make a Warhammer game, are you banking... I mean, I guess it's like any other IP game. Are you banking yeah. less on, like...
So here... Okay, how about this? I will pose this to you.
Okay.
Assuming you are not a fan of either of these two IPs,
yes.
which one would you enjoy more? South Park, The Stick of Truth, or whatever the more recent one is, or Warhammer Space Marine?
I guess the question is really, am I more or less inclined to the type of humor that South Park is? I know where I stand in that.
Yeah. And I bring this up because both The Stick of Truth and whatever the more recent one is, who's my current roommate, is playing, and I can't for the life of me remember.
The Fractured Butthole?
The Fractured Butthole.
Correct.
Not The Fractured Butthole, although that is the pun they're going for.
Right, exactly. The
Fractured
Butthole.
Very solid
butthole.
Pun.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Totally.
Is I think, one of the best creations from... A third party IP into a video game that you will see. Period.
Right, because it's actually a solid RPG system.
Well, no. I'm not talking about the gameplay. I'm talking about the faithful recreation
for sure.
Because it's made by it's Trey and Matt Parker, whatever their names are, whose names I'm forgetting.
Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
Yeah, Trey Parker and Matt Stone are actually making this video game, so it's the most faithful recreation.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get me wrong, there. Like, and I think it's the best. But the question is, which one's better as far as, like, which one would you play more? And I would posit that unless you're just a fan of fart jokes, which The Fractured Butthole is kind of a right. fart joke in a game, which isn't necessarily even a bad thing, I think Space Marines is the better standalone game.
That might be true. For me, it's so funny that I actually have... less of an inclination to play either or, not because I'm not a fan of either IP. I'm actually a little bit, like, watching as much gameplay as I've had for The Fractured Butthole, it looks like a solid RPG mechanic. Some of the humor seems a little... I say that in as much as, is it a deep, engaging JRPG mechanic? No. Dear Lord in heaven, no.
I wouldn't call it a JRPG,
though.
Well,
I'm saying, is it... No, right. I'm saying, like... In terms of what I expect from a, like, when I talk deep RPG mechanic stuff, like, we're talking, I'm talking concepts of things like not just leveling, but, like, multiple, you know, 50 different classes and all that stuff. Like, when we, you know, like, take a game like, you know, Bravely Default or Bravely Second or even, as of late, any of the Persona games. Those I would call deep. JRPGs.
None of these which I've actually played.
Right. I'm saying, like, that's what I... A deep, deep, deep...
Sure.
Japanese RPG. If I say an American RPG, I'm talking more things like Witcher 3 or even something like Fallout 4.
An American RPG.
Well, I'm saying
the first
thing
you bring up is like what? Should, okay, from the North?
Let me say Western RPG. I think that's a more appropriate term. RPG.
Western's
a more appropriate
term. Project Red's what? Sweden?
Yeah. So, yeah. A Western RPG. Like Witcher 3, Fallout 4.
Fallout's
you know,
fine.
Even Diablo in that regard. They all are, you know, they share a similar kind of
Mass
thing.
Effect. Yeah. I get you. KOTOR. Right. Yeah. I get you. I just love the fact that you were like American.
I get you.
Sweden company.
Hey, look. They sell primarily in the state. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I'm just no, but that all being said, I still think Ubisoft did the latest one because it was
For which one of those three?
Fractured Butthole. They did the
The South Park games are Ubisoft.
Yeah. I think Ubisoft has figured out how to make the most palatable versions, like games.
Well,
light.
So you got to realize that Ubisoft is the publisher, like not the development studio.
Who
and many of these. I couldn't tell you. But
they've found for like two times over, like the people that do like hardcore games light. Because if you take Fractured Butthole is like light RPG in that it has a lot of the same veins as RPGs. There's turn-based mechanics. You have kind of classes. You have certain things like that. And then you take like Mario plus Rabbids, and that's like turn-based strategy light.
Yeah. No. South Park Fractured Butthole is a 2017 role-playing game developed and published by Ubisoft in collaboration with South Park Digital Studios.
So there you go.
So it was a collaboration between Ubisoft
and
the
South
development.
Park.
Yeah,
right.
And development South Park.
So it was developed by Ubisoft,
Which is news to me.
And that's why I say
impressive.
Like, well, because they've been getting more and more in. They're one of the few publisher and development studios. EA is who you're thinking of as less of a.
Yeah, and that was at well. It's so that they're kind of and now I almost want to go in and look.
Like
is,
Ubisoft makes Assassin's Creed, and they publish Assassin's
right.
Creed. It may be like Ubisoft California or whatever. Or,
Ubisoft California, Montreal. Montreal is the one that I'm
right.
I'm
that's the main
with.
Studio. I think is in Montreal.
They own Ivory Tower.
I mean, there's other studios for sure underneath
right.
their belt. I'm not saying that there's not. But
Belgrade, Berlin, Bordeaux.
Yeah, because I think Mario plus Rabbids was an Ubisoft Prime. I have to double check exactly. But the point being is that they have figured out a way to make these very, very complex games and sort of
so apparently
make light versions of them.
So EA has like BioWare.
Yep.
They used to have Westwood, but they killed that off,
correct.
Et cetera, et cetera. Looks like Ubisoft just goes with the Ubisoft space, the city name.
Yeah. Well, because it's like they do that. I think Square Enix does that now.
Right.
Because they had bought Eidos years ago. And I think that's, I'd like to say it's based in Quebec somewhere.
Somewhere.
I forget where it is. I know,
all I know is they killed.
No, they might be paired. I forget where.
All I know is they killed off Hitman, and it makes me sad.
I'd say, look, they didn't kill off Hitman. Hitman's still. I thought
I'm pretty sure they did, well, or maybe they did and they brought it back or something.
There's
like that.
That new game that exists that's sort of episodic-y.
Yeah, and that ended in like 2014.
Okay, well they'll bring it back if it makes the money. That's all it boils down to, my friend, is that if it makes the monies, the power moons. The coins. I don't know why I said Power Moons. I've been playing too much Super Mario Odyssey.
Yeah, you have.
But let's go back to talking about your new job. Your new job, we won't say where for sake of being cagey, but it's you said game development, and that intrigues me.
I mean, we'll be cagey, but we'll be, if you do a simple Google search, you'll be able to find it. Because
okay.
I work for a company that develops slot machines for iOS and Android.
Oh, that's right. We talked about this. The idea of that. It's and I remember I told you this exactly because I remember we talked about this. So like, yeah, I'm working for this company that does XYZ, specifically that. And I was like, man, that's got to be making some mad money. In the grand scheme of things, I mean,
they're paying me kind of well. Yeah, they're definitely yeah.
Do you tend to develop how do you? So I guess I can ask these questions because these aren't.
If I'm pressed, and I'll go ahead and before you start asking your questions, if I'm pressed, I am not a game developer. I am a platform developer, and I work with the game developer. I handle the back end, and okay. Our back end handles something along the lines of. I think the metric that I heard recently was 200,000 spins a minute.
Yeah, because a lot of these applications, especially when you to kind of peel back the curtain into mobile development, especially on the game side, you have really one option, and maybe a second
We have about.
You have Unity and then something else.
I'm pretty sure we're Unity.
Yeah. Only because it's not...
And to put it in perspective of the size of the players in the game, King, are you familiar with King?
You mean the boys that tried to or did successfully copyright in very specific spaces the word candy or crusade or what the fuck?
They are or the saga. Makers of... They're the makers of Candy Crush Saga.
Correct.
The largest fucking mobile
right.
game
make,
ever.
Make, yeah, I'm not good.
They're printing money.
Correct.
Instead of entering our vertical on their own, they decided that they would team up with somebody. So we actually have a deal with King.
Cool.
And I'm not like throwing shade. Like when I was being hired by this company, I made sure and I Googled it. And I was able to Google... company name plus King and find this. So and that's not like...
It's not.
Yeah. And so to put it in perspective, we're teaming up with the largest mobile company possibly ever that's owned by Activision Blizzard.
Right.
And I
forget they are owned by Activision Blizzard.
Yeah. They are. I know this because...
No, I forget. I honestly forget who owns what these days sometimes.
I couldn't tell you who owns anybody else. I just know that King is owned by Activision Blizzard. And it's crazy because like my boss is a gaming veteran of like 25 some odd years and has worked on things like Ultima Online, Dark Age of Camelot,
yes,
Warhammer Online, Star Wars Galaxies. The guy we just had a happy hour because one of the guys from California was in town and he was a 12-year veteran of this little company named after some snowstorm.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so and he worked on these little games like Diablo and Hearthstone and World of Warcraft. And it's just crazy to hear these stories from these guys that have been in this industry for decades. And I'm just like, oh, wow,
well,
because really?
The industry has, like, on a business level, has changed so dramatically.
Oh, yeah.
Only because we've come to a point now where... You basically are almost following a software model. Like right now, we're at a point.
Really, a video game company following a software.
Well,
when
I mean like a software model, I mean like a business software model. I mean in
you
the
mean you mean a software as a service. I was about to just say SaaS, and then I realized that no one knows what a SaaS is.
Exactly. So for those who have no idea what block as a service is, either games as a service or software as a service, the idea is you have an application. Let's take one that's very popular that everybody uses on a daily basis, Gmail.
I would actually even use a better example for a comparison purposes. Windows. Windows, back in the day, was a piece of software that you bought in a box at Office Depot or Best Buy or even
Office
back
Max.
In the day... Circuit City.
Correct.
And you would go in and you would install on your computer. And then a new version would come out. You have Windows 95. Windows 98 comes out. You have to go back to your Circuit City and buy that in a box and go in and install it. But these days, with Windows 10, Microsoft has said, this is the last version of Windows you're ever going to need. We're going to continuously update this, and you will either... Windows isn't the best example because in a lot of these business and categories, you would have a subscription to it. So you would pay $30 a month, $100 a year, what have you. But with Microsoft, they will make their money off of doing other things, such as advertising to you.
Right. That's why I say
and that's why you were bringing up the idea of Gmail.
Right, because Gmail typically people assume is free and sort of assume it, but when you get to the more businessy tier.
Right. Well, and even in the free tier.
Right.
The free tier, you are not the customer.
Right. You're data.
You are the product.
Right, exactly, to advertisers. But if you think of the if you like you want your own custom domain or
right.
things like that, it's
for,
also
for my business.
Right.
I have battleshopper.com and I
yep.
have an entire email setup and that is all done through Gmail.
Right.
Granted, it is a grandfathered and free tier of the G Suite.
I pay for mine for CRTV kind of stuff. But
oh,
the
that's
point,
so sad. You didn't get a grant. You didn't get a grandfathered in account.
I have one for my old one, but it's like $8. It's like nothing. And the thing is like, it's the idea that I am paying a subscription fee and I'm getting the continuous service. A more if you're in the creative space. Adobe, for example,
Adobe,
is
yep.
that as well.
Creative Suite is
you know,
the thing.
It is also now a
those,
software service.
For those not aware, like if you were to go out and buy an Adobe, 7 years ago, even five, 6 years ago, you would spend $1,500 and you would get this version
yep.
of Adobe. That version was yours. You would could install it on as many computers as you want it.
Correct.
But you would get in software updates. But nowadays, it's the Adobe Creative Cloud, and you have an account with the Adobe Creative Cloud. It's like, what, $35 a
Something
month?
Something like that.
And you can log in from any computer. You can download it
yep.
on that computer, but you can only be logged in on one computer at a time, and it's all software. It's all cloud-based. And it's,
correct.
And it's great for the people that use it.
Mm-hmm. We use it here all the time, but or at least I use it. But so that's... understood there. So games as a service is that same idea except apply to games.
Right.
Now we've had that in the past a bit with things like MMOs.
Yeah, with
like
World
that.
Of Warcraft.
Warcraft, and... Ultima Online, stuff we've all mentioned. But where we're starting to go now is the idea of, because at that point in time, you still had to pay for an application. You still had to pay for
you'd
your
buy
your
World
Wild
of Warcraft,
line. You'd
you
bought,
pay for the subscription,
right.
but when a new
expansion
came
out, you still
you'd buy
that
expansion.
Too. So now what we're coming into at least on the business side of things, because of stuff like Apple Pay, because of stuff like what's Google's
Google Play. Google, it's all Google.
Whatever
Play.
The Google, yeah, whatever the in-app purchases stuff like that. Loot boxes are part of that. Even the idea of all these sort of you know stores. We've come,
microtransactions.
Microtransactions is a generality of it. The idea of having these small bite-sized chunks of money. That I can pay to get
we
something.
You go in, you download one of our things. You're given X amount of chips to go in and play these slot machines.
Yeah.
You run out of those chips, though.
Oh, damn.
You got to either wait for, you know, tomorrow.
Wait,
yeah, no, you don't want to wait.
Mm-mm.
So you go in and you buy some chips.
I got to spin now.
Yeah.
I got hot slots.
Yeah, no.
but that's the point. And so you put all that perspective, that is a fundamental change on a business level. This is not me talking about whether you agree or disagree with that. This is, you know, we can have – that's an entirely separate discussion of whether or not, you know, it's legal or not or anything like that. That's an entirely
– Oh, no, it's definitely legal. Like, that's a thing. It's definitely legal. Whether you believe it should be legal, that's where the debate is.
Right.
As far as the laws on the the laws currently on the books.
It's funny because there is a – they recently did a podcast, one of my ones I watch, Dude Soup, where they had a lawyer on talking about loot boxes and gambling and stuff like that. And it was interesting kind of how –
See
how certain, and again,
and I would even be curious because I know the loot box craze is a thing, and to my knowledge, you're legitimately just buying this loot box. I would be really curious to see if there is a legal differentiation between buying a loot box and buying a currency to continue playing a game.
That's always the hard part. The currency to continue playing the game. That's where
because that's what we are. Is you're buying chips,
right? Exactly. You're not. It's. A lot of times when you talk about gambling, it's people always assume just money and stuff like that. But
and like
you get
for the record, like yeah. we're slot machines. Like we're not hiding the fact that we're gambling.
No, no.
With our company, one of our company's revenue streams is the fact that the MGM hotel chain, which includes the MGM Grand,
yep.
the New York, pretty much half of the Las Vegas Strip. by playing our games, you gain rewards to go to these casinos and get, like, comped rooms or free meals or what
have
you.
And this is not even saying that what – because this is where we start – like, the gray area isn't so much of adults playing it. Who cares?
Right.
You know.
No.
So long as there's regulate – you know, if it truly is quote-unquote gambling or ruled as much, as long as
it's not gambling because you're not winning currency.
Right. This is more me saying just as a – not what you specifically do, but just as a generality.
I do believe that our company would still frown on minors playing our game. I am not speaking as a representative of our company.
Right.
I am speaking as a representative of me, myself, and I, saying if I were to ask, I would guess.
I would guess so too. Only because if you're part of your sales thing is the idea of comping a room at an MGM.
Yeah.
That shouldn't be going to a kid, you know, a 13-year-old kid. And, you know, and this is where we get into all these sort of things. But the point being is, you know, getting back on track for this whole games as a service, software as a service type thing is talking to a veteran of that, you know, that many years who has seen the industry go from this idea of buying expansions.
Oh yeah.
To DLC.
The guy, like I said, the guy that we just had the happy hour for dropped out of college to go work for Blizzard.
Yeah.
And he was a 12-year veteran of Blizzard. He saw Blizzard turn from 200 people to 3,000 people.
Yeah.
Like, he started on Diablo 2. Diablo 2 came out in what? 1999?
Yeah, I guess it did come out in 99, didn't it?
I'm guessing.
It came out a while.
It came out. It was 99, 98.
I definitely was still in high school when it came out, so it had to be 99 or 2000.
Old?
Yeah. I graduated 2002. We talked about this before. I'm an old man. I just hang out with you young folk. That's what keeps me. Truth be told, I'm an age vampire. I suck the life out of all you guys.
June 29th, 2000.
Yeah,
for Diablo 2. Right.
Yeah,
the year I graduated elementary school.
Wow. Yeah. No, I was 2 years away from graduating high school.
Okay.
But taking all that in and just, you know, seeing that sort of the business progress, because it's amazing when you think about all these things. Is like, I mean, back in elementary school, let's flash back to you elementary, me.
Yeah.
High
well,
school.
let's look at Blizzard as a really good example.
Well, because when did you ever think that we would come to, and this is why, you know, games like your, you know, companies like yours are doing successful.
Yeah.
Companies like even Blizzard
are
doing
successful.
Well, I say successful in this arena.
It is met my company has met my criteria of being successful by getting me a much better day job.
Right. But I'm saying, like, successful is in, like, obviously if they're hiring people that and giving you, this is me saying,
yeah,
successful in that we've come to a point now because the tools are ridiculously cheaper or free or even we're at a point now where even the tools to make games are a service.
Well, yeah, no, because no, that's totally right. Like,
yeah.
So Hearthstone was Blizzard, and we keep on coming back to Blizzard because it's like very few people have a bad word to say about Blizzard in the gaming community.
Except for the Unity.
Exactly. No,
yeah.
I was about to say, except for the people who have worked for Blizzard, but that's an entirely different story.
Again, we could talk, you know, business is business and game development,
and that we could spend an entire hour talking about how
the work conditions.
Oh, God.
I know many friends who have told me horror stories from other friends of theirs. And
I now work with those people.
Yeah.
And most of those people said, I'm done working for this industry. I'm going to stop making games I want to play and go making games my mom wants to play. And, like, that was a thing in my interview. I asked multiple times, look, the gaming industry has this terrible, terrible record of having a terrible work-life balance. You're working these 80-hour weeks for not nearly enough compensation. And I was effectively told, yeah, we all came from that. We all hated that. We built a company that didn't do that.
Well, because you ultimately have sort of two choices, at least when it comes to that. You can either A, go into a, for lack of better words, and I put this in heavy quotation marks, easier to develop. And I don't mean that it's not hard. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, if you compare
Destiny 2 to what I'm doing,
Destiny 2 to a slot machine. There is still development that goes into a slot machine, especially when you start
the things that we focus on are statistics on what the slots are or the economics of the thing that I'm working on. I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about what I'm working on.
That's okay.
I'm not going to.
We won't. But the point being is, when someone pulls a because this is also on real slot machines. Like, real slot machines are roughly the same type of development.
And if any,
except
if any,
with a lot more regulation. Yeah, like
and
RNG.
If any, and well, yeah, and if anyone wants to know what your odds are a slot machine are, they are posted by the Las Vegas Gaming, Las Vegas Gaming. Or Nevada Gaming Board?
Yeah.
Board? Nevada. I don't know if it's board.
I think it's Nevada Game. Either gaming or gambling board, one of the two. But something like that.
And you can go in and see how terrible the odds are in your favor.
Yeah, because they will tell you the RNG and everything else. It's all part
it's not even RNG.
Well,
at
I'm saying
point.
Like
it is very, very precisely done to say that they will pay out one in every 20,000 or whatever.
It's at a point, and the beauty part about slot machines now versus slot machines when they were mechanical is the minute you pull that lever, the minute you push the button, it already knows whether you won or lost.
Well, even
it just needs to display it to you in
Nevada Gaming Commission.
Right. It just needs to display it to you in a pretty way. Because that's it already knows
Even back when it was mechanical. So for those of you who don't know, one of the most complex things to do in programming that is really interesting and the entire basis of encryption is random number generation. It's really hard.
Well, because it's not. True RNG, as it's called, random number generation, is hard because it require. It's the idea of not so much giving a random number.
Computers are built by people, and people are really bad at being random.
Right, and so it's a matter of going and saying, which one of my many things that are going on right now can I even utilize to generate a true random number? Meaning one you cannot predict, one that is not linear in the way it does things or exponential or whatever.
And so there are stories of, I don't remember the name of the game show, but there was a game show back in the 80s that was more or less
luck.
Yeah, there was a big board and there was a dude that just sat there and studied it and guessed the algorithm and got onto the show and just ran away and made all the monies.
Yeah, press your luck. After that point, they had actually had pattern boards and whatever. And he just studied it and understood
He figured out the pattern and he won all the money.
Well, I mean, even in video games, that's an older concept.
Right.
Pac-Man as an example. Yeah, memorize the boards, you fucking ran that.
And to get back to the point that I was getting at is, even back when slot machines were mechanical, they had a random number generator. And did you know that actually one of the more common random number generators in a mechanical slot machine was a seismic sensor?
Oh, that's a smart way of doing it.
Yeah, and so
especially in a casino with people walking around.
And for those who don't know what I'm talking about, instead of trying to determine algorithmically coming up with a random number, you would have a sensor that would determine seismic activity, and based off of that, it would use that as a seed to generate a random number,
and then just
and it would determine whether or not you win or lost off of some random seed being the basis of it that was generated off of the seismic activity in the area. And as Roberto said, that could be just people walking around, or depending on how sensitive it was, it could be literally the microscopic earthquakes that could be happening in the area as well. And so that's how back in the day, before algorithms became the norm,
right?
And even possibly now.
It's the idea of finding something, some data set that gives enough noise, that you get a true random number. And most of the time, most of the time in computers, that's very, very, very hard. because even, you know, you can maybe utilize time, but time may not be exact if you don't have a crystal. Like, if you start thinking of all these sort of things that go into making a random number, it's not just as easy as, like, random right. in a command, because even those aren't that random.
And for those wondering, if you're really curious about this, like I said earlier, encryption, at the end of yep. the day, is based off of the ability to generate not just a random number, but a random prime, a very, very exceptionally large random prime number.
If you've ever generated a key, even on things like, even in
we were talking about Blizzard earlier. If you have a Blizzard authenticator, that is based off of being able to generate a random number with the time being the seed.
Right. And sometimes what will happen is if you've made a key, it'll ask you, move your mouse in this window because it's yep. utilizing your jitter of your mouse as a RNG value. There's a lot of those sort of things, but it's trying to find something that's just generally noise and doing its best to incorporate that. But yeah, and so I realize we've gotten way off topic talking about RNG, but I'm okay with that. But that's the hardest part of that. And again, this is not me ever saying what any developer does of any product is easy, because none of it's easy. It's just the idea of saying, all right, we got to figure out how to make the RNG great and figure out the economics of whether this is going to get the most money or whatever, that kind of stuff, or anything else like that, yeah. and the right odds, and if it's real slot machines following, you know, regulations, or if MGM has given us some type of, you know, initiative that we should follow this and do X, Y, or Z, versus the, all right, so level 15 keeps causing this weird esoteric bug on this specific build of a computer, but it doesn't do it on PS4, but it might do it on Xbox One, but it doesn't do it on the Pro. Like, it's always like edge case bullshit.
No, or more realistically, for mobile development, it does it on iOS 10, but not 11, and it does it on the Samsung Galaxy 7.
Right, exactly.
But see, here's the fun part. Is I get to avoid all of that because I'm on the platform team.
Right, you're on.
We're on the server side.
Yeah, you're on the. Oh, all it does is make a REST, you know, a REST call. Or
you're joking. That is legitimately what we're doing.
I know it is. I know that's what it is. That's the beauty part of all these things. This is where Unity is. There's a reason why Unity
makes a REST call to our yep. seed or our .NET backend. Through REST, and that's all ideal. Like,
yeah.
I listen to the game developer, and I have to implement what he tells me to, but I only have to do it once. He has to do it, like, six times.
Right, and this is why it is that Unity has sort of taken off. And it's not necessarily a silver bullet. There are still things you have to do.
Yeah.
But it's become, like, because the fact we're at a point now where the development tools are now a service, you know, because I remember the year, I'll put it this way. I remember the year that
Unreal went open. Right. Well, not open source.
No, it went free. It went free.
It went free as long as you made under $200,000
right,
a year.
All these sort of things. I remember that.
It's actually $200,000 a year in profit.
Makes sense.
If I'm not mistaken.
I remember that year because that was like one of the first South by Gaming years. I think it might have been the last free one. I can't remember. But I remember that year so vividly because I kept talking with every developer, and I talked with one of the devs, one of the teams. I think I forgot what game they're working on. But they were like a day from paying for the Unreal Engine.
Like the, what, $2 million license?
Whatever the license was going to be. They were like a day away, yeah. And it did flipped.
And they're just like, oh my God,
it's
we
a big,
can do
it's a,
it.
It
yeah, oh
a,
yeah.
It's a big enough deal. It was a big deal because that was the one of the primary ways that I think, I don't even know who owns Epic anymore. I think Epic is still on its own, but I don't know.
I think so.
I'd have to double check. But it was one of the primary ways that company made money.
Right.
And now we're at a point now.
They're probably making more money licensing out and like letting people go in and make it for free, and the big people winning out.
Well, because that's the point, is that everyone uses Unreal and Unity.
Like it's Unreal, you know? And Unity, and then you have Star Citizen that uses what is now Amazon Lumberyard, which by the way,
because what was it the
CryEngine?
The CryEngine. They're the last. They're the only flag bearers of what may resemble the CryEngine.
And
I say may because there's some drastic changes they had to make to actually make the CryEngine somewhat decent to develop in. Because
you don't,
I've heard enough. We won't say who the authorist is, but we have a mutual friend who I've asked many a times when it came to the CryEngine.
He's an animator though.
But that doesn't mean he doesn't hear people talk.
I was about to say, you know who was invited out by our mutual friend to go boating with the rest of that development team in Austin back in June.
You?
Yeah, I've had the conversations with the direct people, and it's fascinating.
Well, because CryEngine.
I will tell you what I was told by the people that worked on that directly to sum it up in all things. They call it the CryEngine because working on it makes you cry.
Because it's one of those engines that when the CryEngine came out,
it was groundbreaking.
Well, it wasn't. It was groundbreaking. It was
gorgeous.
So if you put it this, so let's we've talked about game engines before in the show in the past. We've talked with many developers about game engines. I think we actually had oh my God, I'm blanking on his name.
Battle Sauce guy?
We've had Phil on before, but yeah. even other people within the game industry here. So for those, just to kind of recap quickly, a game engine, for lack of better words, is the platform that you develop a game in. Usually it's a thing that kind of handles what we like to call low-level code, things like graphic, not low-level code, we'll say mid-level code. Because if low-level code would be something like...
It can handle a variety of levels.
Right. Well, I say mid-level in that... If you think of something like DirectX or OpenGL or Metal or any of those things as like low-level calls to...
Does DirectX exist anymore, note?
Yeah, DirectX like 11 is like... Yeah.
Well, 12. DirectX 12 was Windows 8.
Whatever,
we're now on 10.
Whatever the latest DirectX is, it still exists. It's just you don't call... people don't typically call it DirectX because no one thinks about it anymore. But it still exists. Because DirectX, you know, you're making the same calls when it comes to your Xbox stuff. I just don't know what number it's up to. It just no one thinks about it because it just installs in the background, but it still exists.
I don't know if they phased that out in favor of other things is what I'm asking.
I don't think they did, and not in the way that you understand it.
We'll continue.
That's okay. Maybe they did, but if they did, they must have called it something different, because Metal is the same kind of concept. It's the idea of, here's something that talks to the graphics card or the graphics API stuff, because you can make your own damn thing if you'd like, but something like a DirectX handles that kind of stuff.
The last version of DirectX was DirectX 12, and the last release was July 29th, 2015.
Okay.
For Windows 10 and Xbox One.
So there you go. It's still being developed.
Oh, well, that's still a 2-year-old version, though.
It doesn't matter because it's just it's not there. This is where you get to graphics cards and whatnot. There isn't a whole. There's stuff that's been developed, but it's like APIs are part of DirectX 12, and that just barely got into graphic card stuff. If that makes any sense. We're at a point where like software is already way beyond some gaming things, but anyways, it doesn't matter, because basically what DirectX is, it's just API calls, and you don't even see them anymore now in your base stuff because they're so included in your code. Like a Unity, for example, can talk to DirectX, but it also has the ability to talk to a Metal layer on iOS or whatever the fuck layer Google's using. I don't know what their terminology is. I don't think it's OpenGL anymore, but it's something along those lines to do some type of graphical talk. Even something as like the Windows API. I remember at one point they had Arrow for applications on like Windows 7. It's been kind of phased out to something else. I forget what it's called now. But I would call that like a low-level call. In the grand scheme of things. And, you know, there's more than that for sure. What engines tend to do is that they handle a lot of the middle tier stuff. In other words, they have the ability to translate a model, a mesh model, into this graphics engine from other applications like Maya or whatever. It has the ability to understand level layout and 3D environments, in that you can go into these your applications and develop within that, either putting models in or adding textures, whatever. And it may have some, you know, it may have its own scripting language involved. For example, like I know Unreal 4 has its own kind of artsy language. I forget what it's called. I think it's storyboards or some shit like that. I forget the exact name.
Yeah.
It may have netcode, and even that netcode may be very, very basic and very, very primitive.
Well, it has varying levels of it.
Right, exactly.
I think Unity has quite a bit of netcode.
Well, because it has.
And for those who aren't familiar with, and I assume that your listenership knows at
least netcode is basically the term we utilize for online gameplay code. It's a generic.
For the generic code, the generic phrasing for the ability to allow you to play with other people through the internet.
That can be something as basic as I send message to computer for a turn-based thing, and then other computers send message back for what happened. Or it could be something as complex as I log onto server and play Destiny 2. And track bullet and all the stuff that happens. But the idea behind it is an engine does that. And so we have sort of these levels of engines that happen. We have Unity.
From what I've heard,
yeah,
most engine net code is kind of bad.
Oh, yeah. That's why you develop your own. That's why that's why I've said before and I'll say it again, and I've told everybody this, and I don't care what anyone else says, net code is hard.
Oh, God, yes.
Netcode is hard.
There's a reason why we use REST.
Yeah, because REST is easy. Netcode with latency in real time is hard. It is hard, 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 hard. It is why certain games are like, why does this have an online play? Because it's fucking hard. It takes talent. And anytime I see good netcode, I applaud that developer. Especially like fighting game ones. Like the guys is it ArcLight? I forget who does Blaze Blue.
That is not my.
Well,
genre.
Even Capcom does amazing netcode, and I'm impressed that they're able to pull that off.
Capcom does something worth.
Hey, look, netcode's hard, especially the fighting game. If you think about that, but anyways, so you know, we think of our engines now. We have, I would say, our most popular ones right now are Unity and Unreal. Unreal's always
it's Unity, Unreal, everyone else.
Yeah, because like. Like, there are engines that exist. Like, we have, let's see, because there's the Frostbite engine, which is
Here's the thing, though.
Yeah.
I say, and for those, I don't know your download numbers, when I said Unity, Unreal, everyone else, I was Unity, Unreal's right below it, everyone else is a huge step below them.
Yeah, it's but in the so here's the thing. Like random stuff.
Here's the thing though. You talk about Frostbite. Frostbite is specifically developed by DICE EA. Like you have a lot of these really, really good engines that are developed in house for a very specific specific company.
This is where I'm coming down to with Crytek in that. It was one of those engines that was developed for a very specific thing, kind of like id Tech's engine, which you typically have in a Doom game. Other id games may utilize it, but...
Yeah, and if we were going down that, like, you have Blizzard, the World of Warcraft engine was developed for World of Warcraft.
Yes.
And it is brilliant for what it does, but they're never going to let anyone else touch that engine.
And so...
Same thing with Frostbite for
EA
DICE.
EA products.
Crytek developed the CryEngine, and they did kind of open source it, and then it eventually was bought out.
The
by
problem
Amazon.
Is that it was basically developed for Crysis, and Crysis was
it was developed for Far Cry.
Oh, Far Cry! God, that's right, Crysis. That's right, Far Cry.
Far Cry, then Crysis.
And it was traditionally when it came out for the PC. It was the idea of here is an engine
that will bring your computer to its knees because it is so gorgeous and it is 2004.
That was its mission in life, and it's always been its mission in life. And it's now 2017, and that's not what we're about anymore.
Well, it still kind of is because if you go in and you look at if you go in and look at Star Citizen, it is still gorgeous.
Oh yeah.
The thing that made it interesting in that though was that if you look at the difference between what Far Cry 1, 2, 3, Primal, blah de blah de blah de blah it is set on the ground. It is set on an island. It is set on where a layer you have a an ocean layer, then a ground layer, then a thing on top of the ground layer, then a
thing
on top of...
Yeah, it did a lot of environments
right.
like that well.
And so you know what that applies really well to?
Space.
A space simulator.
No, it doesn't.
And exactly. And so that is,
no, it doesn't.
And so that is the one thing...
And
that is the one thing that I overheard and spoking with was where they have... the people that are working on Star Citizen have a better understanding of the Crytek engine than the people that built the Crytek engine.
Because the Crytek engine, no one utilized. This is what was so funny when that got announced before even knowing our mutual friend. Yeah. When that got announced and I had read that,
well,
I was like,
at the time,
huh.
our mutual friend wasn't working for Robert Space Industries.
Right, when I read that and I was like, well, that's an interesting engine choice because my brain is like, when's the last time I heard the Crytek engine utilized for anything beyond Far Cry or Crysis?
When I read that, I just thought, when I read that, I just thought, oh man, the Crytek engine is great because it makes gorgeous, gorgeous games. I didn't think about, oh man, the Crytek engine is terrible because it doesn't fit with this makes at all.
I thought of just like, well, that's an interesting dev choice because I'm at a point now where you can make gorgeous games in the Unreal Engine. And I don't mean or even if like I would have been impressed if they said like we're licensing the id Tech engine. Go, oh, interesting. It was the idea of I had not heard that engine name in a while. And I was like, that's an interesting choice.
I imagine they chose it because they said we want to make the best
right,
looking game
right, and
on the PC specifically.
Right, and there might
and if you think about the best looking games on the PC, especially if you think historically,
correct.
You think the Crytek.
Right, and again, it was less for that for me going because I've gotten now to the point.
I think it was a business decision over a development decision at the time.
And so now it's it was funny was I had I can't remember what it was. I think it was early.
Oh, and just for the record, I backed Star Citizen for like $300.
I have backed as well. I am a backer as well of the game.
Were you Kickstarter backer or were you?
I was definitely a late backer. For sure.
Yeah, I was a Kickstarter backer.
I may have been the Kickstarter backer. Actually, I was the Kickstarter backer versus the original crowdfunding effort.
Well, no, because what they did was they started on Kickstarter, and then once the Kickstarter thing ended, because Kickstarter says you have like at most 30 days. And then you end your thing and you're blah, blah, blah. And they effectively said, well, people still want to give us money, so we're going to start our own crowdfunding.
I had to look again when I
And to this day, you can still go crowd. Star Citizen, by the way, I think is the largest crowdfunded product, period, because they've raised like $150 million.
They've done a good job.
It's kind of silly.
But yeah, either way, it was that reading that point, I was like, because I'm at a point now where I understand by the time Star Citizen was even announced.
By the way, how long are we going tonight?
We'll go on for another 20 minutes. We're almost out of time.
Okay. Yeah, because I'll talk till midnight.
I know that. That's why. I've kept track of the time. So don't worry. Don't you. It's like 20 more minutes. It's fine.
Okay.
We started like around 7:30 when we got in the main show, is basically what I'm trying to say. 8:30. Sorry, not. 8:30.
I was about to say I wasn't going to correct you, but I was like, I definitely was still downtown Austin at 7:30.
Yeah, you were here. That's how drunk you were, Matt. You've been here for 2 hours, Matt. You never went downtown. You've been here since all
no. Day. I went downtown this morning because I work downtown.
Matt, what are you talking about? You came back after work was done. You came over here.
No, I went to a happy hour at CU29.
CU29.
My new favorite.
That place closed down 5 years ago.
My new favorite cocktail bar.
But going back to that, I'm at a point now where I understood that. And when when Crytek had announced, hey, we're shutting down. Sorry, guys. You know, and I was like,
I don't know. I don't know if it was a hey, we're shutting down. More of a hey, we're being bought out. Those are two entirely different
stuff
conversations.
Like that. But it was the point of like the whole engine was going bye bye, and I'm like, I wonder what the hell started. Oh, and I think it was like around that same time. And when I say same time, meaning like maybe a month or two ago, that I was like, Amazon Lumberyard's a thing and we're using the Crytek engine. I go, well, I know where they're going to be moving to soon because there's only one other engine left. And I literally, my question shifted from, How is it developing in the Crytek engine with our mutual friend? It's how is it porting to Amazon Lumberyard, and is it a 1-to-1 to Crytek or not? And it's like,
well,
it,
so
kinda.
most of the Crytek engine guys just went to work for Robert Space Industries.
What else? Yeah, of course, because it's like you guys are still utilizing this thing.
You're the only ones left,
and that's what was such a sad thing for that engine, because it's like when I say we're at a point now where that's
I don't think that's sad. I think that's a hey.
I mean, I can't.
You have a very specific skill. You are very valuable to us.
Oh, no,
here's
no.
A bunch
I don't mean
of money
sad
to continue.
As in, like, it's sad those guys have work. I mean, it's sad in that, because if you think of something like an id Tech engine, that's still being utilized by anybody in Bethesda, you know, whether
well,
it be the
yeah,
Doom.
Or hell, the Doom engine. You know what the Doom,
that Doom,
right.
Doom is
well,
it,
you know what the Doom 3 engine is being used by? Probably even more than the guys at id.
Who?
Did you know that the entire Call of Duty series is based off the Doom 3 engine?
I didn't know that, actually. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And even that's like being licensed out, and that's the point being is there are you can you know other companies have licensed their engine out, but they have their own sort of prime game on there. I say that's sad for Crysis, not because they're Crytek, not because their prime game, Star Citizen, is going to be on there, but because it's not like a Far Cry thing. It's not a Crytek game. But, you know, it's cool. Again, I really want to know all the details when it came to Amazon acquiring Lumberyard and how that worked out, because I think that will be where hopefully Crytek, the engine, not so much the Crytek technology, will live and survive, because I think Amazon Lumberyard as an engine is very interesting because of how much that's integrated into streaming as a starting thought. In that Lumberyard has a lot of these built-in things that all revolve around being part of Twitch and how it is that like the idea of having a voting mechanic built into your game because Lumberyard has that built in by default.
Well, like you can do that or you cannot.
Right, it's but I'm saying fine. Like that is part of the engine. That's not like an add-on or something you develop or in the world of Unity a module you purchase or whatever. That is built in from the ground up. And I think that's where Lumberyard's interesting, in that a lot of the things that it brings to the table have less to do with the typical things we talk about when it comes to engine tech. Things like how it handles shaders, how it does volumetric lighting and bullshit like that, right? Things that make it look pretty. Because Crytek, we've already explained that engine looks pretty and looks beautiful.
It's probably the prettiest.
Right, it's a pretty engine. But all the things that Amazon brings in because of who it owns, because of how it does things, is all these like low level built in ideas of streaming. And I think that's where it's going to be interesting to see what gets developed in Lumberyard.
And,
I don't know
and
what
more
will.
Specifically and more yeah. specifically now we're getting into things I can't talk about. But I will say this. We will see what integrations they end up using if Star Citizen is ever finished.
Right. Well, because that's the point, is that there's things like that, and then you start to put in the other aspects. Because it's funny, we talk about this all the time with game developers, and you know, even though you are you are part of a game team, you are part of the team.
I'm not a game developer. Well, no, I will at some point call myself a game developer out of vanity.
But the thing
vanity,
is that you're part of the side of game development that no one thinks about.
Yeah, no. Do you think of the guy that makes Candy Crush? Do you think of the guy that makes?
Well, no. When I don't even mean that. I mean it's the idea that someone will come on whatever gaming forum you'd like, and will say, "I've got a great idea for an MMO," and you go to them and say, "Have you thought about databases yet? Data what? Do you understand?"
Oh, that you're not wrong. But specifically MMO, like, there are so many memes generated.
Right,
yeah,
but the
no.
point is that,
and,
like...
And what people don't... And this is the guy that started a business from the ground up side of me talking about great ideas are a dime a dozen.
Right.
Not less than a dime a dozen. Great ideas are a penny a dozen.
Right, and the thing is that a lot of time when it comes to, and I was talking, and I've said this before to people who want to be game devs. I don't have a desire to be a game dev.
I didn't either.
But I understand.
Once I knew the industry.
But I understand all the things that go into it. I have enough friends who are part of it. Like, I'm this weird, like, informed press person that understands things. Because when you ask the idea of, like, I'll tell a friend of mine and say, look, if you want to be a game developer, make tic-tac-toe. Make a tic-tac-toe game on your own.
I mean, admittedly, we did a, that was in Computer Science 201.
Well, it's the idea of you take something exists and you break, because once you understand how you break down the rule set of tic-tac-toe,
right,
and break down the logic and you start doing it, it's the idea that you're looking at things differently. You're looking at not just as a game to play, but like, what are the rule sets of this game? How do I, you know,
well,
interact
we,
with this
we
game?
Legitimately actually did do, it was like a CS 201
yep.
course in which at best you were if you were able to program a tic-tac-toe game that a human was able to beat, you failed the assignment.
Right, and that's the point. You make a tic-tac-toe game because that's like your basic kind of game. Your second tier game.
And for the record, I wasn't in any kind of game development degree.
No, that's why.
It was software engineering.
Right.
Degree.
It's how. But the idea is that's how you look
right.
at you look at logic sets. You look at rule sets, because a lot of times games are less about what a final product is. It's more about the iterations to get there, and I say that being at panels for there's a thing that's coming up pretty soon here in Austin called Fantastic Arcade, and years ago
it something I could expense?
Potentially. It's more indie developer stuff like that, but I'll give you all the details.
Okay.
But what was interesting about it, we'd had the developers, they'd had a panel from the dev team that made the game Push Me, Pull You. Before it came out on, it's this weird kind of like indie game where you like expand like this like worm type thing and you like try to move a ball. It's a really cool game, but years before it came out, they had done this before it hit PlayStation, whatever. You can look it up; it exists. But they had a panel with the guys, and they had showed all the different builds that they had to get to the final game. And their first build was just like playing with something, seeing if a mechanic worked or not. And it was these like iterative builds, and you can kind of see where they were going and eventually where they got to. But it was really fascinating seeing all these different ways of getting there. And when you realize that, when you see kind of that sort of understanding, like, oh, that's game development. It's this idea of you have an idea for a game. Even Battle Floss, I was actually at
the
panel.
Yeah, I'm surprised you haven't brought up Battle Floss before this with how well you know Phil.
Well, because I'd never saw the early builds of the game until RTX, and I went to their panel. And they had showed their Game Jam version. And there were things like that never made in the final version, like zoom cams and stuff like that. But I was like, oh, they'd figured out the game that early on. They got lucky. And not because of a bad way, but it just like they got it down. And a lot of times that doesn't always happen. That's not always the case. Sometimes you don't figure out a game until – and I say game meaning when it's fun, when it's interesting, whatever, until mid-tier. You may have certain ideas, certain things you have to hit, and especially the AAA space – we start talking about, you know, games become less of, all right, what they're engaging, whatever. It's the idea like, well, how do we – sometimes it becomes the idea like, how do we make sure that they will spend money on loot boxes or make sure it's balanced, all that kind of stuff. You know, we could argue that later. But that's part of development, and that's all part of the discussion. And it's interesting when your engine, you know, you'd chosen, it would be Lumberyard. Part of that discussion has to be, well, do we utilize Twitch integration? How do we utilize it? Should we, you know, because the question is then if we don't, then why are we bothering with this engine? Why don't we just go to something else like Unreal Engine or Unity or fucking whatever?
I was about to say Unreal Engine or Unity or nobody
else. Or whatever, you know.
Or build our own. Those
build
are
our
the
own.
Three options.
Build your own.
Those
whatever.
Are the three options.
You know, I have a friend, you know, fan, a friend of the show, J. Kyle Pittman of Minor Key Games, like all his engines are in house. I mean, they're all great 2D engines.
Oh,
they're awesome. He's more of a .NET thing developer, but he's a good guy, a really good guy. And,
he's making
2D games, he's
right?
More
no,
platform.
And I'm not trying to like down talk building your own engine. I'm just saying it's so hard compared to
that. That's why you get a Unity. That's why you do this. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the advantage is. But going back to the stuff like that, where I think is interesting with Lumberyard is we had this joke discussion of like, have you thought about databases? Have you thought about web servers? And it's like, lumberyard. Well, you could, you know, run your own web server. That's fine. Or you could use our AWS integration, where it just has the EC2 VM ready for you, ready to go to do this thing.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, no.
And
no.
It's all part of it. It's all part. And this is all.
So who knows where Amazon actually makes money? Because I promise you, the thing that you're using for actually Amazon.com,
that doesn't make money. Where it makes the money is everything.
No, well, like Amazon.com retail.
Oh no, no,
doesn't make money.
No, I say everything, meaning like Amazon.com retail brings in one revenue stream. Amazon Video brings in one revenue stream. Amazon EC, you know, AWS brings in another rev stream.
Yes, but did you know who's actually okay? So those are revenue streams. Who's making profit?
Oh, I don't know.
AWS.
Oh yeah,
like almost nobody else.
No, probably yeah. But that's the point. Is that like. I can talk with certain people understanding AWS and Amazon and stuff like that. But
AWS,
the point being,
makes a
is
majority
that
of
becomes
their...
a lower level portion of Lumberyard.
Right.
And that becomes this thing. And if you start to put all these things in perspective, I am really, really curious who will utilize Lumberyard in an interesting way. Not because the game couldn't be fun, but just thinking of when you utilize that engine
from the people that we've talked at Star Citizen, no one besides people at Amazon will utilize Lumberyard because Lumberyard is a bitch to develop for.
That's why I'm curious. That's why then that's where we come back to the Crytek thing, which is why I was like, when they picked that engine, I was like, did they just get a deal on this?
Apparently.
was there a fire sale? Like,
like
sure,
I said,
by way.
The one thing I will continuously
except
quote.
Except for Star Citizen.
Yeah, the one thing I will continuously quote publicly from the time that I was talking with Star Citizen developers was, they call it the Cry Engine because when you develop on it, it makes you cry.
Matt. Always a damn pleasure to talk
with
you about so much stuff. We didn't even probably talk about half the things you want to talk about.
I had no agenda. I was just like, I imagine this is what we will talk about, but we didn't get there at all.
Matt, I know you have your side. We can't talk about your primary hustle, but we can definitely talk about your...
We probably could if I felt like it.
It's okay.
But
let's talk about your side hustle,
because my
side hustle
yes.
is far more fascinating and far more interesting.
And far more benefits me directly.
Yeah, exactly. So let's say people want to support you, or they happen to play this amazing card game we've talked about in the past, Hex Shards of Fate.
Just go look up Hex Shards of Fate. It is available on Steam. It is available on PlayStation 4.
Mm-hmm.
The PlayStation 4 client isn't that amazing yet, and you can't support me if you play the PlayStation 4 client yet, but that's an entirely another story. Hex Shards of Fate on Steam, on Mac, go. Mm-hmm. The long story short on the PlayStation thing is that Sony is...
Oh, no, it's you don't have to explain. Yeah. Honestly, you do not have to explain the thing because I can already see where... I can already draw the conclusions.
Point being, go play Hex Shards of Fate. If you like Hex Shards of Fate, go mm-hmm. check out battleshopper.com. battleshopper.
.com.
Or find me on Twitter. WAFFLEOPHAGUS
Waffleophagus.
And
that is how you find you, and that is how you do that. Of course, you can find me. I'm at Vincent404. There are Twitters, chat rooms, and everything else in between. If you want to catch previous episodes of the podcast, you go to our website, cosmicradio.tv/8bitlife. There are links to show notes, as mentioned previous episodes. Of course, after you've supported all the battle shopper things, bought all your awesome intro decks and cards
I should do intro decks. I don't do intro decks.
Well, we bought enough cards that are, you've acquired all the things you need, and you look at your pocket and you say, well, I got $1.50 left in change. Head over to patreon.com/8bitlife and help the show become bigger, better, more awesomer. So that is it for today. So next time I talk to Geek, something completely and utterly random. Bye, people. This has been a CosmicRadio.tv audio production. For more awesome shows, head on over to our website, CosmicRadio.tv.